In re duplex at Sleepy Hollow, David L. Prince, counsel for appellant S.E. Amster, Alan I. Namias, counsel for Appley Enterprise Bank and Trust.
Mr. Prince?
I would like to reserve any remaining time. Should be substantial because my comments are going to be very quick on my opening. Unlike the prior cases, there's no dispute here as to the factual situation that brings us before this panel. The facts are identified. The facts are confirmed by both parties in their briefs on how this situation presents itself. This panel is called on to determine whether or not the bankruptcy judge misapplied In re Falstead when it allowed the annulment of 9 foreclosure sales when it granted relief from the automatic stay. The record is complete on the participation or lack thereof of the 20 bidders at the foreclosure sale for these 10 involuntary bankruptcies. The bankruptcy judge reviewed the record, understood the nature in which these debtors and others affiliated with them were gaming the system with the bankruptcy code, whether it be in Delaware, whether it be here, whether it be the multiple attempts by the debtor and those affiliated or allegedly affiliated with them to game the system. I think the bankruptcy judge had enough and was infuriated by the actions of those who brought those involuntary petitions to once again to try to delay my adversary's right to foreclose on the properties. The application of In re Falstead falls directly on this court to determine that the appellant has the appropriate request for a reversal of the lower court's decision. The balancing of equities, which is the keystone to In re Falstead, falls squarely on for Mr. Amster. 9 other of his people were ready to bid, all knew what something the trustees at the auction did not know, in which those involuntary petitions had been filed. Taken in and of itself, it's understandable how the trial court would then make the decision that it did. But when the trial court allowed that 10th sale, which was actually completed by a bidder who participated, and then ultimately decided that that sale must be annulled, puts this in direct conflict with the prior orders.
So wait. Let me ask. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All I was going to ask is, did the buyer withdraw after he became aware that the properties, that bankruptcy had been filed, or did the trustee demand that the sale not be completed and offer the return of the money? Do we have those facts?
Those facts are not in the record of these proceedings. Those facts are within the appellate proceedings that is before this panel, which will be ultimately decided. What this panel has are the facts that 9 sales where no one participated, including my client, were annulled. Yet the one sale for the 694 property was not annulled.
My understanding is the bankruptcy court said that it wasn't annulled because it had been canceled, so that there was no sale to retroactively approve because that sale had been canceled. So when you're saying annulling, you're saying annulling the stay to retroactively approve the sales that took place.
Correct. I believe that a rescission was processed, but again, that's not in our record before this panel. But I do believe that the sale was completed, funds had exchanged hands, the trustee under the deed of trust had received, but apparently it did not yet issue the trustees upon deed upon sale due to the rescission with the bankruptcy courts, not with the knowledge that the bankruptcy had been filed before any determination had been made by the bankruptcy judge.
But if your argument, which, and I'm going to rephrase it, your argument seems to be that because the bankruptcy court did not annul the stay with respect to that 10th property, that that somehow means the bankruptcy judge should not have annulled the stay with respect to the 9 properties. So don't we have to look at why that sale was different, why the 10th sale was different from the other 9, if we're looking at why the bankruptcy judge did what the bankruptcy judge did?
You would need to look at what the bankruptcy judge, based on the record we have before us. And at that time, the record presented to the lower court was 9 properties did not proceed to sale and 1 did. And the determination made by the bankruptcy judge was to annul, allow reversion of the interest to the lender, because no one bid. But yet, the one where the bidder was present, bid was accepted, funds had exchanged hand, annulled that sale and required it to be redone. And that is before this panel in terms of the bankruptcy judge's determination on that sale, but not before this panel in today's proceedings.
But wait, didn't all 10 sales go forward? It happened to be 9 that were completed through credit bid.
Correct.
And 1 was completed to a third party.
Correct.
And you're telling us that it's not my recollection of the facts, but you're telling us that at the time that the secured creditor Enterprise filed its motion for relief from stay, at that point in time, the sale to the third party had not been rescinded?
I don't have the citation for the record on that specific fact, Your Honor.
But that's what you're depending on, right? You're depending on the fact that the bankruptcy court didn't know at the time that it determined the annulment of the automatic stay under Feldstead that there was a rescission of a cancellation of the sale to the third party. My understanding is that you're saying they didn't know, the bankruptcy court didn't know at that time, so it shouldn't have separated out that. But my recollection of the record is that the bankruptcy court did know that at the time. In fact, that's one part of the ruling, that the court said, I'm not going to rule on this because essentially it's moot. It's that sale has already been canceled, so I don't need to retroactively approve that sale because it's already gone. But with respect to the other 9 sales that were credit bid, that the court ruled on that.
I do know that on February 2026, there was the ruling as to the annulment of that sale. That ruling was a different ruling than which we proceed on here today. Again, the factual determination that this court requests of me is not at my fingertips as to what the bankruptcy judge knew as to rescission, but I would suggest to the court from the record that we have is that the motion for relief from stay was filed on a very expedited basis by the creditor in order to proceed forward to make sure that the sales were again held or, as the judge found, to be annulled and allow the sales to stand.
The property that your client is concerned about was not the property that is subject of the current appeal and was the property that was excluded from the annulling of the stay.
Correct. My client's interested parcel was one of the 9 that reverted to the lender.
He knew that when he got there, is there a dispute that he was late, that after the sale had been completed?
The factual record before the court was to be contested, but based upon the expedited proceedings, the declaration of my client stating what he said, the later filed in reply by the lender, brought in a new factual element, which was the criers, the person who conducts the sales, declaration that Mr. Amster, he claims, was late. That is a disputed fact, and I don't believe the court made its determination based upon whether Amster was present, ready, willing, and able to bid, but stood on the sidelines, or whether he brought into the declaration filed in reply that Amster was late. As an officer of the court, Amster was there. Amster had over $10 million ready to bid.
But he didn't bid.
Correct.
And he also did not inform any of the trustee or anyone else that he knew that the properties had been, bankruptcy had been filed.
That is correct. He remained silent. There's no dispute as to that fact. But again, I think the underlying theory and the issue for before this panel is the balancing of the equities here. Nothing good, zero good comes out of annulling those sales. The entire foreclosure process is simply wiped out because no actual competition took place on that date. The record is facts are undisputed. There were 20 people there bidding on all these ready to bid on these properties.
And they all evidently knew that the properties were subject to a bankruptcy.
They did. That's what the record, that's what the evidence would lead us. It's a reasonable inference that they all knew what my client knew. They're professionals. They do this as their daily living. They are foreclosure buyers. And they knew, and they had maybe better access to information than what others had. The balancing of equities, again, Your Honor, on Falstead. Again, counsel and I don't disagree on almost anything other than the outcome of that decision made by the underlying bankruptcy judge. We believe that the equities fall in favor of reversal.
But most of the factors that the court would have considered under Falstead are not disputed, and they don't support the result that you want. The bad faith of the debtor, clear. The fact that they acted appropriately to immediately set aside the stay or null the stay, that's also not disputed and clear. It doesn't support. The one factor that support is the interests of third parties affected by the sale.
And also the trial court's determination when he says the equities overwhelmingly favor annulment. The judge relied on the balancing of equities because the other elements were there and really not in dispute. And while In re Falstead talks about not one element controls, that's why there are 12 separate elements. But I think for the court, this panel, for the determination that it should be making, is that those equities really do fall on behalf of Amster and all others ready to participate in the sale.
But forgive me. We were both going to go. So,
just, go ahead.
Didn't Mr. Amster cause the harm that he has suffered, or a large part of the harm that he has suffered by not speaking up at the foreclosure sale and saying to the foreclosure trustee, a bankruptcy has been filed?
Absolutely not. He had no duty to speak.
That wasn't my question.
He did not cause the problem.
He didn't have a duty to speak. I'm not saying that he did anything wrong, but if he had spoken up, he could have changed what happened, perhaps, right?
If he had told the trustee before the sales had been conducted that a bankruptcy had been filed and I'm here timely, then the trustee acts at his peril, doesn't he? And the bank itself then doesn't have the ability to come forward and say we're unaware of the filing of the bankruptcy cases.
I don't believe Amster had a duty to speak.
I don't say that he had a duty. The question was he could have prevented the harm that he's now complaining about.
I disagree vehemently with that for the following scenario, because this happens time and time again in the foreclosure world. You show up, you know there's a bankruptcy, and you walk away. And that's what would have happened. You show up, you know there's a bankruptcy, the sale goes down. Days later, you're told your sale is no good because there's a bankruptcy. The history of this type of industry demonstrates it happens all the time, and you're not going to depart with millions and millions of dollars, let it sit in a bankruptcy in a trustee's account, only be told later, oh, we're retroactively voiding because there was a bankruptcy. So again, Your Honor, no duty to speak, and practically, there is no reason to speak.
Well, but your scenario is that the money is deposited and then it's tied up until some period of time. If the sales never occur, then you're back to square one without having to deposit any money.
But then we're all in the same position. The equities apply for everyone, for all of those properties to be re-auctioned.
Right, and that's exactly what you're asking us to do, is to force that particular property to be re-auctioned and to reverse the decision of the bankruptcy court to annul the stay.
That's exactly what I'm asking.
That's what I'm saying. So what you're trying to achieve would have occurred if he had said something, and he could have prevented that by telling them from the outset, you can't conduct these sales. I'm here on time. I'm telling you a bankruptcy's been filed. Don't go forward.
I don't believe the imposition of that duty on my client to alert the trustee was his responsibility. And the practical application of that
is... I'm not saying it's his duty. I'm just wondering if he could have mitigated the situation significantly if he'd acted.
And is the trustee going to rely on what he tells him? Oh, how do you know? How do you know when I don't?
Well, just check.
Well, again, Your Honor, hindsight is 50-50 in this regard, but it does not relieve or should not change the outcome.
But don't we have the 10th sale that we can look at to see exactly what this foreclosure trustee would have done had the foreclosure trustee known about the bankruptcy? Because if the foreclosure trustee knew about the bankruptcy when the 10th sale happened and then rescinded the sale, then can't we use that to say that Mr. Amster is at least partially responsible for the harm he asserts he's suffered?
I disagree vehemently with that. For the reason stated, I do not believe there was a duty, and you can't impose on Mr. Amster that obligation to speak when he has no duty to speak, and then you can't hold him responsible with all those others that did not participate. He's not the benevolent angel of the remaining 20 bidders to say, look, stop, guys.
Oh, but he's the one who's here on appeal.
Yeah.
True, because he should have been at least allowed to participate in that auction.
But he didn't have any obligation and didn't have any ability to stop what occurred, and so he should not be held responsible for what happened. But he should get the relief that he wants.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, all I was going to say is that to the extent I'm not saying that Mr. Amster had a duty, but I think the fact that he knew of it, didn't say anything, could weigh into the Feldstead factors. It could be
whether
something that
fairness.
The court considers.
Right. Whether you want us to rule that this is an unfair situation and that it should be reversed, well, there was somebody who had an opportunity to do something about it and chose not to, but at the same time wants to take advantage of the fact that he's now be able to make the claim that this is unfair.
Well, it was unfair to Amster and it's unfair to all the others. And then to punish the others along with, because if the court is to rule that the order which annuls 9 sales is to be reversed, all others that were present would have the same possibility to bid at the auction. And to single out Mr. Amster for his failure to speak is unfair to the remaining bidders that were present.
I understand your argument. Thank you.
Thank
You're
you.
Out of
now
time.
Now I'm out of time, and
You're
I'll have
time.
No rebuttal.
That's okay.
The brief must last long.
May it please the court, Your Honors. Alan DeMias on behalf of Enterprise Bank. Your Honors, it's interesting. Opposing counsel began the presentation by saying there's nothing factually in dispute. And the entire period of time was spent, I think, disagreeing over facts. Judge Niemann, if I may call you that, I think to answer your question initially relating back to whether the court did in fact know that the sale had taken place, the answer is yes, you're correct.
Just to clarify, the 10th sale to a third party, yes. The court knew at that time that sale had been rescinded at the
yes.
time it ruled on the retroactive motion.
Absolutely.
For relief from motion
and
for retroactive.
There was no question in the court's mind that was a far different situation than the other 9. I think one of the things that should be looked at wasn't raised by opposing counsel, but was addressed in his papers, was addressed in our reply, is the issue of standing. They cited the case of PRTC, and the court should look at the fact that they were not a party that made a bid. They were not a creditor in this case. One of the things that the court found in PRTC in finding that there was standing is that party had, in fact, been a creditor, which was a very much different situation than what you have in this case. And in the case, in PRTC, they cited to Fondelier, which was one of the cases that we cited to in our brief, which really restricts standing to people with an interest in the outcome. If you take the extreme example of claiming an interest, for example, Mr. Amster could maintain, well, I lost lots of money because I didn't get to bid. I wasn't the prevailing party. There's no limit to where you draw the line as to who gets standing. However, there is a whole string of cases, including the Pecan Grove case out of Arizona, which specifically found that in relief from stay cases, parties other than the trustees and debtors had no standing to. But
in this instance, yes, he was the one that filed the objection to the annulment. His motion, his objection was overruled, and he is the party here on appeal. It's not a Fondler situation where somebody is asserting the rights of another party who was present in court and they weren't present in court and didn't make any of these arguments, right?
Yeah.
That distinguishes to some extent your standing argument.
Perhaps, Your Honor. But I think on the merits there's really a lack of any...
He has nothing at stake is what you're suggesting.
Yes, he has nothing at stake whatsoever here. And to be honest with you, Your Honor, Judge Kamm, we provided three declarations with respect to both his lack of registering pre-bidding, pre-qualifying to bid, his attendance, and the other thing that I think they are trying to surmise that while there may have been 20 people present, I know for a fact that there were not there 20 people to bid. Three or four of them alone were my client and my partner who were there to observe. And there's no evidence that's ever been introduced that anyone else knew anything about these bankruptcies. And as much as Mr. Amster may be a sophisticated investor, as he was referred to at the hearing by his counsel, as much as he may go to these sales regularly, I would respectfully submit that the people that conduct these auctions are equally professional, and they know the procedure, and they know how to investigate whether there is a filing right up to the minute. Now, is it missed on occasion? I suppose it may be. Nobody knew about it here, and there's sworn testimony to that fact. So they went forward.
So are you suggesting then that he didn't really know, and that he's just asserted that now that it's all come out, and so he has said, I knew at the time, but nobody really knew?
I can't say that. I really can't. I don't want to accuse him of lying. I don't. But it's a strange circumstance, whereas the court has already picked up on, why not say something? And, well, okay, maybe he didn't have a duty, but for God's sakes, think about the consequences, and here we are. And if you just would have said something, they'd have paused. Somebody would have made a phone call. That's all it would have taken was one phone call, and none of this would have happened. And then, like the case that we did have to go and do another auction, which we renoticed, we would have renoticed all of them, and he could have come to any one of those and bid should he have chosen to do so. And so I think that it's much ado about nothing, the position that he's taking. Additionally, I don't know, Your Honor, I saw nothing, and I reviewed many cases that cited Felstead, that ever applied the rights of a third party to be analyzed. In other words, it always seemed to me to be a case of either the estate or the trustee versus a creditor, in particular a secured creditor. Those are the cases that I've seen. So while I'm comfortable, I suppose, if the court ends up doing the test, I still think that the equities far favor my client. The attempt by opposing counsel to do an analysis between the debtor and Mr. Amster is a non-starter. That goes nowhere. That's not a proper balancing of interests.
But there could be a third party who bid at the and whose sale was completed, and then learns, and then the motion gets filed and comes to court to support annulment of the stay, because they want the property, and they like the property. It's particular. They've viewed it. It's a house. They want it. They paid a substantial amount of money. Maybe they paid more. Maybe they paid a little less. But whatever, they want it. That would also play into the court's determination, right?
Possibly so, but let's be clear, that did not occur here.
I agree. So, he didn't bid. He didn't have anything at stake. Yeah. And he made that choice.
And the other interesting part, I think, of the argument in applying Felstead by opposing counsel is they seem to adopt a part of it as long as it's them in the weighing of the or the balancing. Yet the annulment part is rejected. Yet annulment has been part of 362D for a very long time, and it doesn't interfere with the California legislature, as they say it does. Many, I don't have statistics on it, but countless numbers of properties go to sale.
No bidding.
Nobody knows. But annulment has not been the problem here. Annulment is not the problem. And so I think the only other thing I'd like to stress to the court is that Judge Clarkson made a very, very thorough, independent investigation into this court, going well beyond what we had presented, and we presented a tremendous amount of documentation. He went to back to Delaware, where the original cases had been filed about a little less than a year before that, and he spoke with the judge. And he read everything, including the transcripts that were made available to him. And then he had two prior cases before him prior to these 10 involuntaries where similar things had happened, similar parties. And so he was quite up to speed. And the other thing that happened in this case that you don't often see, the court issued numerous sua sponte orders. And they were quite lengthy. And when the first of them, I think, came when he determined that the receiver would be excused from compliance based on our motion because we had a receiver previously in state court. Judge Clarkson took it upon himself because he knew what was going on here. He knew about the fraud behind the scenes and the attempt to manipulate the bankruptcy court process, exactly what was happening here. So the ultimate decision to annul the stay was not an abusive process. It was not an abuse of discretion. It was nothing other than a solidly well thought out ruling based on proper facts that were before him. So I think that the court should affirm the ruling. I thank you all.
No questions.
No, I'm good. Well, thank you both for your time, and we will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All rise. This session is now adjourned.